new BBC Proms database online, and that's at bbc.co.uk/proms/archive. bbc.co.uk/proms/archive. And we've two visits to the Proms today. At 3 o'clock, we'll be going over to Cadogan Hall in London for a concert of music by Judith Weir, Thea Musgrave, Ben Northcott, Brian Fernyhough, John Taverner, Jonathan Harvey, Gabriel Jackson. And then at 7:30 this evening, the second Prom given by the Berlin Philharmonic with Simon Rattle. They'll start off with Wagner's Prelude to Parsifal, and then they'll be joined by Carola Mattila to sing Strauss's Four Last Songs. And the second half contains music by Schoenberg and his two pupils, Webern and Berg. That's live this evening at 7:30, Berlin Philharmonic and Simon Rattle, and also live from Cadogan Hall at 3 o'clock. That's all here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's just after 1 o'clock, time for the news with Ian Skelly.
Nearly 6 million people are to be told they've paid the wrong amount of tax. £2 billion has been underpaid through the pay-as-you-earn system over the past 2 years. Now nearly 1.5 million people will be asked for an average of £1,500 more. But more than 4 million others who've paid too much will get a rebate. An overnight curfew is in place in Christchurch after the earthquake, which caused widespread damage across New Zealand's second biggest city. The country's Prime Minister, John Key, has said it was a miracle no one lost their life. In a separate incident, a British man was among 9 people killed when a light aircraft crashed in New Zealand. The Foreign Office says next of kin have been told. The plane, owned by a skydiving company, came down soon after taking off from an airstrip at Fox Glacier on South Island. A suicide bomber has killed at least 6 people in the northern Afghan city of Kunduz. The victims included several policemen. Kunduz was until recently a relatively peaceful part of the country, but the Taliban has been increasing its activity in the area in recent weeks. Demonstrations are due to take place across France against the expulsion of Roma gypsies by President Sarkozy's government. Nearly 1,000 Roma were deported last month. Anti-racist campaigners are organising protests in 130 towns and cities, including Paris. A senior Conservative councillor in the West Midlands has defected to the Labour Party in protest at the way the coalition government handled cuts to the school building programme. Elaine Costigan was the deputy leader of the Tory group on Sandwell Metropolitan Borough Council, which had 9 school projects scrapped by the Education Secretary Michael Gove. Shoes and eggs have been thrown at Tony Blair as he arrived at a bookshop in Dublin to sign copies of his memoirs. He wasn't hit. There were also scuffles between anti-war protesters and the police. The weather forecast for the afternoon, it'll be a mainly dry one with sunny spells for most parts, but cloud and showery rain over Northern Ireland will slowly move towards Western Scotland, Wales and Southwest England during the afternoon. And that's the BBC News and the weather at 1:03.
With Ian Skelly. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time, there's another chance to hear last Monday's Proms Chamber Music Concert, a recital by Lars Vogt, in which he'll be playing Janáček's In the Mists and Schubert's Piano Sonata in G, Deutsch 894. But now it's time for the first of this weekend's visits to the world of early music.
Welcome to the Early Music Show. I'm Lucy Skeeping, and both programmes this weekend were recorded here in Devon at Dartington International Summer School, a quite unique and hugely popular music school that attracts participants from all over the world, and perhaps most distinctively from all age groups and all abilities, amateurs and professionals. It's been running annually since the mid-1940s under a variety of illustrious directors, including the BBC's own William Glock. And I'll be speaking to both the incoming director, John Woolrich, and the outgoing one, Gavin Henderson, in the programme today. Certainly many household names have been associated with Dartington over the years. Hans Keller, John Amis, Harrison Birtwistle, to name but a very few. And I'll be chatting to some of the stars of this year's summer school later on. These days, the whole season is divided into separate weeks, each one focusing on a particular theme. And this week, week one, is Early Music Week. So I'm off now to chat with Gavin Henderson, Artistic Director for the last 25 years, about the importance of early music here at Dartington. Thanks so much for joining me, Gavin. It's a rare treat to be able to sit on the lawn here in the quadrangle on a couple of deck chairs. Is it always sunny like this at Dartington?
Well, people remember it like this. If you've experienced Dartington in this weather, this is how you remember it.
Everyone I've spoken to says there's a kind of magic about this place. Can you sum it up in some way?
Well, there's magic about the place, but I think the magic is really about the kind of community that gathers here. And people say, well, what is it? Is it a school? Is it a festival? Well, I say, well, actually, it's simply a kind of gathering where people from all kinds of backgrounds, all kind of income streams, religions and so forth, all ages, all abilities, and that's fundamental, just joining in making some extraordinary music. I mean, I always remember one of the artists, a very distinguished pianist, was Stephen Kovacevic, actually, was being interviewed by an American paper, and he was giving a recital at the Carnegie Hall. And they said, Mr. Kovacevic, what is your favourite hall? And he said, the Great Hall at Dartington. And they went into this. He said, it's a wonderful audience, this incredible group of people you're playing to, who are all making music. They're all challenged and working away themselves. And the terrifying thing is, of course, you're going to meet them all for breakfast.
Now, you've been here sort of holding the reins for some 25 years. That time is now coming to an end. You must have many memories.
I suppose the aspect that I will always have memories of, and this is a wonderful estate with this incredible garden, is of the vocal ensembles and the early music ensembles. I mean, one week particularly madrigals, but it's not just madrigals, it's very early vocal ensemble work. And, you know, that people stake claims to certain trees that they're going to sing underneath, you know. when the sun shines, it's wonderful. It's almost Charles Ives. You hear all these different groups singing away across the gardens. But that's very, very special.
I'm delighted to say that I'm joined now here in the green room by Emma Kirkby. Thanks so much for taking the time before what I know is going to be another busy day for you.
It is, but it's a pleasure.
So you're a real regular here now. You've been coming some years?
I've lost count.
I mean, do you look upon this a bit as a holiday or just hard work?
Well, both, actually. It's just lovely to be here. And my son, Nick, is... he's a Dartington child. He's wandered around these grounds ever since he was tiny, and he just knows it like the back of his hand. So it is a family thing, really.
So you have your group for your 2 hours a day. Have you planned in advance exactly what you're going to be doing every day and the repertoire? How does it work? Do they all sing together? Do they sing to each other?
It's a class, so there are always people listening, and I like that because I've found this every year, sitting in the audience are an incredible range of people, all ages, who have extraordinary expertise. So I've long ago learnt not to sort of sound off about some topic I don't know much about, because if I do, someone from the back will say, well, excuse me, the fact is that, you know, the bone you're talking about is called something or other. I'm a surgeon, you know. But the collective brain power of amateur musicians is always stupendous, whether they're singers or players. It's a meeting of minds in all sorts of ways, and I learn hugely from the Dartington Weeks, quite aside from anything I may feel like saying to my students. That's the least of it.
You're known for quite a broad range of music that comes under the term early, but for me, perhaps I most enjoy your performances of the English lute song repertoire. For me, I don't think there's ever been anyone to touch you in that. I mean, is that the kind of music that people bring, or do they bring Italian arias and all sorts of things?
Thank you very much. I mean, I do feel at home there. You're absolutely right. Already, some of my singers have been working on duets and trios and one or two solos with lutes. And for me, I think the experience for these people of that is worth hours of coaching from someone like me. I suppose one of the things about Dartington is there's a something that looks after it all, so that even the most basic admin mess-ups, you know, you turn up and there's no instrument there, or there's no accompanist, or something's wrong. You'd always find that in the audience at that point, somebody says, oh, well, I can play the harpsichord. And I never worry about things going wrong here, because something always emerges, that you find there's someone in a corner somewhere who can help. It is a very collaborative place. That sounds a bit goody-goody, you know, but actually I do find it very inspiring, really, that somehow this place has a way of sorting out problems for itself.
Dame Emma Kirkby was singing Henry Law's The Lark, accompanied there by Anthony Rooley, in that recording from the 1996 Dartington International Summer School. Well, Robert Hollingworth is an old friend of the Early Music Show. I think many of you will know his name. He's here at Dartington, and I've invited him to come and join me in the green room of the Great Hall, where he's just been rehearsing the choir. Welcome, and thank you very much for coming, Robert. You're obviously having a very, very busy week. What's your official role?
Well, I've got a few, actually. The main thing I'm doing is conducting the all-comers choir, which this week, as far as I can see, seems to be somewhere over 100 people, doing a rather unusual Renaissance work. The Strigio 40-part motet and mass, which goes into 60 parts in the Agnus Dei. But I'm also running the vocal ensemble class, which is a sort of madrigal motet class in which everyone's singing one to a part, which is quite a challenge. I'm also preparing for a Fagiolini concert on the Wednesday, and then other individual little coachings here and there.
Robert, how important do you think Dartington is for early music?
Well, here we are at Dartington. I could come up with some effusive answer about, oh, well, it's the back rock of this, that and the other. But you cannot help noticing just how many people here crop up in instrumental groups, vocal groups, and become professional in a very short period of time. Because as well as the keen music lovers that come here, there are bursaries given to people that have maybe studied at a conservatoire for a year or are just out of school. And my experience over 17 years is that you can very quickly spot, as in any audition, you can quickly spot whether someone's got something. And there are an awful lot of them at Dartington. And you just try to give them a little help here, maybe a little coaching session, or you involve them in a six-part piece that they can sing one to a part with some of the, you know, the regular pros here. And they just jump at the chance. There's extraordinary enthusiasm here.
I get the impression that Dartington Hall is the sort of place that people get quite addicted to. When did you start coming here?
I first came here 17 years ago, 1994. I think I may even have done the Strigio 40-part motet then. I can't quite remember. I did it fairly early on. And I remember being fairly obsessive about the whole place, actually, and couldn't understand why I hadn't been here before and why I wasn't a trog in my early days. So now I have a daughter who's 12, and I'm wondering in a few years' time whether she'll be here trogging till all hours of the night. Do we need to explain what trogs are?
Why not? Yes.
Well, trogs are the helpers, and they work hours that would make the EU blush. And they do everything, really, from helping to move pianos to organising music for the courses to bring you a cup of coffee when you're just about to fall asleep, that kind of thing. They are the hub of the whole thing.
But meanwhile, of course, for them, they're learning a little bit more about the music business, and some of them, I guess, go on to become quite well-known musicians.
Well, Emily Hoare, who's now the creative producer here at Dartington, was my trog something like 15 years ago. So, yes, they work their way up quite quickly into positions of power.
Any highlights for you in this year or any other years that have really sort of amused you or just been moving in some way?
Yeah, mostly the puddings, I think. The puddings are just absolutely staggering. And that's what we all come back for. The puddings are just unbelievable. And everything else, of course, I should say, but the puddings, for me as a chocolate lover, are quite something.
Thank you.
Music in 40 parts by Strigio, the Huelgas Ensemble, directed by Paul van Nevel. Well, one of the groups to have come here to Dartington and made their name are Stile Antico. They studied with Robert Hollingworth's group I Fagiolini, and they're coming down here next week, in fact, for an opera and music theatre course. So let's hear them now with a piece by William Byrd, Nunc Dimittis.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sitting talking to David Staff now. What is it that's so special about Dartington for you?
I could give a very long answer to that question, because there are so many things that are special about Dartington. But I think if I have to condense it, I mean, it's not only the sheer beauty of the place, the whole atmosphere around summer school, when there's a feeling that anything's possible, and that goes for rank amateurs right up to professionals. It's a most fantastic place to come to. Here we can take risks, experiment, and actually learn things to take forward for the rest of the year. It's a time of year which has become more special to me than Christmas or birthdays or anything else.
And this year's something rather special, so rumour has it.
There is a project which has already started. As Gavin Henderson is unfortunately leaving here after this summer school, secretly commissioned, I think, around 40 fanfares for Gavin, written by a great diversity of composers, all of whom have associations with Dartington. Some of them very big names in the composing world, some of them people who work in the office. So not quite daily, but almost daily, my course, the early brass course, we're performing a fanfare for Gavin, newly composed work, and this for us is quite interesting because normally, of course, we're just dealing with music that's written 200, 300, even 400 years ago.
I suppose historically I tend to associate brass instruments with fanfares and playing in town squares from a high tower.
Absolutely. Brass instruments were, you might say, initially used as instruments for town watchmen, watching for fires, watching for approaching armies that might take their city by siege, and trumpets particularly, and later trombones, were used as instruments for producing warning signals. But of course, their usage is for sounding alarms was hopefully quite limited. So they tended to play music from towers. And this is one thing that we started about 15 years ago here at Dartington with early brass. And the idea behind that really was that it's one thing to sit in a studio and prepare a piece or rehearse a piece. It's quite another thing for people, and particularly people who don't get the chance to perform so often, to actually perform in front of people. So I came up with the idea with Gavin of doing initially tower music before lunch each day and before the evening concert each day. And it's become well thought of here, and if we don't go up the tower and play, people want to know why and when are we going to do it. But this week we haven't been up there yet, and the main reason for that is we've been playing more intimate Venetian music, Gabriele Canzonas. A, there's not really room for the number of musicians we've got this year up the tower, but secondly, here in the corner of the courtyard is a much better place to play it.
I must say there is something very special about the sound of brass instruments wafting through the air as opposed to, you know, the outdoor.
Yeah, it seems like to work best. Bagpipes, they sound better far away. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, there are so many other early music events here at Dartington which we haven't got time to feature. I've already mentioned Stile Antico, who are here next week. Also, this week we have Ifagellini, the Rose Consort of Viols, the Dufai Collective, who we're going to hear in concert in tomorrow's early music show, and Colin Tilney, who's running the harpsichord masterclasses and still managing to find time to fit in performances of all of Bach's 48 preludes and fugues from the well-tempered clavier on clavichord. Well, I found a bench in the centre of the green here at Dartington Hall, and I'm joined now by Nicolette Moonan and Jenny Ward-Clark, directors of the Baroque Orchestra here at the Summer School. How did you come to have this illustrious job?
Well, I've been coming here for about 12 years now, and I started coming here to lead for, I think it was Paul Goodwin, who was then directing the Baroque Orchestra, And then one summer, Monica Huggett was going to direct the Baroque Orchestra, and she cancelled with 2 days' notice. And all the music was sent in a taxi to me, and I was asked to direct a Baroque Orchestra, and ever since I've been Baroque.
So, Jenny, what's it like? Because obviously you're a full-time professional player, a cellist, aren't you? And yet here you're working with amateurs, students, young professionals. I mean, how does it work exactly with so many different levels?
Well, in fact, in the Baroque Orchestra, there are a few amateur players, but mainly they're young students or young professionals. It has to be auditioned, actually, because it needs to be of a fairly equal standard to make it a really good sound altogether and make a successful group, not to have too many different standards.
And how do you decide upon the repertoire each year? Because you probably don't necessarily know what you've got in terms of different instruments.
It's the other way around. We plan the repertoire. We've now been doing Rameau every year. And I choose a different opera every year, and then I decide how many string players we want, and then we accept applications for these particular places. So we really look for the players who are going to be able to play.
The routine then for the week is a sort of 2 hours playing a day, or how?
No, much more. Oh. No, because what we do is we combine our playing, because I choose these suites from operas from Rameau, with the Baroque dance. So we play in the morning from 9:15 to 1:15, and then we meet again at 2:15 with Sarah Kramer, the Baroque dance teacher, until 4:15, where all the musicians of the orchestra get to dance a few dances from the suite that we're doing in the morning. And in the end, on the Thursday, we make a show together where we play and dance.
It's really interesting that you ask the musicians, the players, to dance as well, because I sometimes think, in my experience, you know, occasionally orchestral players are a bit nervous about doing anything outside their comfort zone, and I'm sure that must help with the sort of understanding of the way to play the music if they've experienced the physicality of it.
That's
as well
invariably how they comment on it afterwards. The first day they're all a bit sort of, do we have to? And yes, you have to. And but Sarah is fantastic. She makes it easy for everybody, and already today some of the players were saying, yeah, now I understand much better how to play a gavotte, how to play a minuet.
So you're performing Rameau this week. Tell us what piece you've chosen and why.
Well, I've chosen this year to do Dardanus, which is an opera that's always been close to my heart. It's a wonderful piece. And I think the students should have an experience of playing Rameau. Also because there's not one difficult part. Everybody's challenged.
Thank you. part of the suite from Rameau's opera Dardanus, and the performers there were not the students here at Dartington Summer School, but the English Baroque soloists conducted by John Elliott Gardner. Well, I'm off now to meet the incoming artistic director of the summer school, John Woolrich. John, thanks so much for coming in. Now, you've actually been associated with Dartington for many years. What have you been doing here?
I first came when Gavin Henderson turned up as artistic director. He invited me the first year to work with Harrison Birtwistle on a big music theatre project. And, year in, year out, I've been doing composition courses, co-teaching with all sorts of people. And I still have an ensemble called the Composers Ensemble, which was really effectively born here. So Dartington was a place where I've taught for 25 years, off and on, but also it's somewhere which has been enormously stimulating to me as a professional musician.
Now, this week is Early Music Week. Of course, it's one reason we're covering it. Tell us a bit about the course that you're running. It's got a good name, hasn't it?
If I can remember it, it's New Wine in Old Bottles, or the opposite, I'm not sure. It wasn't my invention, the idea of this course. I was invited to do it. But it's worked out as a rather interesting thing. An extraordinary group of composers. And we have access to all the early music groups here. So they've worked with the Rose Concertophiles. They've worked with a Sackbut group. They're working with a Cornetti group today. And a student is working with the Dufay Collective. And all these groups are extraordinarily hospitable. So the students are finding out about what to them are very exotic and very wonderful and colourful instruments. Because the thing about early instruments is that as instruments have got technically more refined, more sophisticated, they've gone away from the rawness of how what the noise is.
The character.
So early instruments have a more raw character.
So you've been associated with Dartington for many years. You teach courses in composition, and you're now going to be taking the reins from next year. How will early music fit into your future plans?
I'm going to keep the same structure that Gavin Henderson has had for the last quarter century, which is kind of within the 5 weeks of the summer school to go through the history of music, so starting with the earliest. And of course the beauty of Dartington is the unique thing in this country is the mixture of brilliant young students, professionals and enthusiastic amateurs. And the big idea, one big idea I have for next year, for instance, in the first week, I've got a young chap called Jonathan Cohen coming, who I think has been William Christie's assistant, and he's conducted Les Arts Florissants in Paris and at the Barbican in opera. He's an extraordinary, enthusiastic and brilliant musician. So we got him to come to work with a professional group of singers, which he will choose himself. So he's doing something which is for his own professional benefit, and he's asked for an Italian coach. And I've asked him to do Monteverdi Book 6, The Madrigals. He's going to spend part of every day exploring Monteverdi. So that's for him professionally. Then, in the mornings, he'll be rehearsing Israel and Egypt with the big choir here. And his soloists will be drawn from the group that he's working with on Monteverdi Madrigals. And when they're not doing all that, the professional Monteverdi singers will be coaching amateur singers here in Monteverdi. So if you see what I mean, there's a thread joining amateur student and professional. So everyone is getting something, but there's a connection between all those elements.
Yeah.
Zeffiro Torna from Monteverdi's sixth book of madrigals, sung in that recording by I Solisti del Madrigale, directed by Giovanni Acciai. And that ends today's early music show from Dartington International Summer School. But Lucy Skeeping will be back tomorrow with more from Dartington, with highlights of a concert given there by the Defy Collective. And that's the early music show tomorrow lunchtime at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news. Well, just looking ahead an hour, we'll be going over live to Cadogan Hall in London for a prom that casts a backward glance to the works of previous generations, played by the Arditti Quartet, Endymion, and sung by the BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill. Music by Judith Weir, Thea Musgrave, Ben Northcott, Brian Fernyhough, John Taverner, Jonathan Harvey and Gabriel Jackson. That's in an hour's time at 3 o'clock. But now there's a second chance to hear last Monday's BBC Proms chamber music concert given at London's Cadogan Hall, and it's introduced by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall for our penultimate Proms chamber music recital. Today's performer is the German pianist Lars Vogt, who first came to international attention in 1990 when he was a prize winner at the Leeds International Piano Competition, and I'm sure he'll have captured every listener's imagination last night with his performance of Grieg's Piano Concerto with the Czech Philharmonic over in the Royal Albert Hall. But we've got him here at Cadogan today. And he's going to play music by Schubert, his late sonata in G major, Deutsch number 894, and to begin, Janáček at his most intimate and reflective. In the Mists is one of his last compositions for solo piano, written in 1912, when the composer was feeling isolated, slighted by the public, and in despair of ever seeing his opera Jenufa staged in Prague. Janáček's biographer has suggested that the mists of the title reflect the composer's low spirits rather than actual meteorological conditions. Many of his chamber works have a direct or indirect autobiographical element, after all. The work also reflects his lifelong interest in traditional music. Janáček particularly relished the rhythmic asymmetry of Moravian folk music, and he incorporated some of this irregularity into the third movement. Lars Vogt himself has written that stark contrasts dominate the work in spite of its title that suggests more misty colours. Intentionally, the pieces lack warmth almost entirely. Now, to begin his recital with Janáček's In the Mists, we welcome to the platform Lars Vogt.